A-M-O-C-O, Amoco. Amoco presents the Edward R. Murrow Program with Don Hollenbeck. Back in 1915, almost every motor trip was an adventure. But there was no adventure in buying gas. No matter which pump you stopped at, you got the same old kind of gas, ordinary gas. And then came Amoco gas, and what a change. Amoco gas was different, for it was the original special motor fuel. Today, Amoco gas is still different, still made from a different formula. That's why it acts so differently, why it's still so far ahead of the field. And now here is Don Hollenbeck with the news.
Good evening. Here is an auditor's report on the state of affairs in the United States of America at mid-year in the second half of the 20th century. President Truman's report to Congress today on things done and things undone, and what the president says is needed. Men and women at work number 61,800,000. That's 300,000 more than 1 year ago. Men and women out of jobs number 2 million. That's the lowest figure since World War II. Production of goods and services climbed 5% over the last half of 1950, but material shortages, cutbacks, and a decrease in demand prevented any increase in the index of industrial output, which had risen last year. Prices leveled off some from their 1950 increase. Wages continued to go up, but at a diminished rate. Average hourly earnings in manufacturing plants went up 5 cents compared with 8 cents during the last half of 1950. Personal income was up nearly $6 billion. Corporate profits before taxes set a new record rate of $50 billion, but profits after taxes were down. The president's report shows the United States is in the military business almost to the exclusion of everything else, but not intensively enough in his view. The armed forces have almost reached their original mobilization goal of 3.5 million men, but that may not be enough. Also, weapons production is behind schedule, although the output of planes, tanks, and other armament has more than tripled since the Korean War began and will soon be coming off the assembly lines at the rate of $3 billion worth a month. During the next year, aircraft production will increase 300%, that of tanks and other such material, 400%. By the end of 1952, military spending will have reached an annual rate of $65 billion. That's nearly $450 a year for every man, woman, and child in the country. The figures continue to be astronomical and, by the nature of their bulk, inclined to lack real meaning. But the president's report does give the picture of a nation making and spending money at an unheard-of rate, engaged in a race to become the mightiest nation on the globe and so overawe any other nation with aggressive designs. And in President Truman's view, we are not yet adequately started on that race. We must spend more and more on defense. As the president put it, where we go from here depends on the decisions made by Congress in the next days and weeks. We can drive ahead on the course of the present defense program, or we can retreat. The safety and welfare of our country require that we drive ahead. Military goals are now being reviewed, the president said, and it's possible they will be increased in several important respects. The president proposed no new major legislative proposals, but he asked for action on previous requests which Congress has so far denied or has granted only in part. A large part of the report was devoted to an appeal for a tough controls bill, for a tax increase of $10 billion, approval of the $8.5 billion foreign economic and military aid program. The president said, whatever happens in Korea, we must take into account what is happening in Iran, on the borders of Yugoslavia, in Indochina, and most of all, what we know to be going on inside the Soviet Union itself. Whatever the extent of the knowledge of what is going on inside the Soviet Union, it is evident there is going on in the Kremlin a review of military goals with some possible alterations, some possible new developments as the Korean adventure seems to be drawing to a close. Events over the weekend support that view. The pomp and circumstance in Warsaw, attended upon the 7th anniversary of the Polish government, furnishes an opportunity for speculation as to the next Russian move. Along with other prominent persons, Soviet Deputy Prime Minister Molotov himself graced the affair and was heard to say the Tito government in Yugoslavia cannot continue long, and that the creation of new American bases in Europe and the Middle East intensify the threat of war. From his observation post in Vienna, CBS correspondent Alexander Kendrick cables me some comments on this and other matters in Eastern Europe. Kendrick sees it as entirely possible there is more to Molotov's remarks than just rhetoric, that if the common form intends ever to do anything about Tito, it's going to have to do it soon before the Yugoslavs begin to benefit substantially from the American aid program. Just now, an estimated 900,000 men are under arms in Romania, Bulgaria, and Hungary. Half that force could be moved against Tito without delay. In contrast to Warsaw's weekend party, another one was held near Paris today in the forest of Marly. General Dwight Eisenhower dedicated his new Atlantic Alliance Army headquarters to a secure peace attained through strength. The cluster of one-story offices and barracks stands on what was until 5 months ago a cabbage patch tilled by farmer Marcel Artaud, and the general told the farmer he hoped that the land would be put to as good use in future as it has been for the past 20 years. The memories of many Frenchmen went back more than 20 years today. Henri-Philippe Pétain died in his island exile at the age of 95, still a controversial figure for all that he had ceased to know or care what was happening. Whether the marshal's request to be buried with the soldiers he led at Verdun in 1916 will be granted is yet to be decided. The ruling now is that he must continue in death to be punished for his collaboration with Hitler by being buried on his island prison. An unforgiving government has ruled that his tombstone will be inscribed only with his name and the curt legend, "No profession." Although he will be buried in his marshal's uniform, and men of Verdun will carry his casket. Another funeral today at a man in Jordan. The assassinated King Abdullah was buried with military ceremonies while arrests connected with his murder now total 500. From Naples tomorrow, the body of Admiral Forrest Sherman will be returned to the United States. The chief of naval operations died of a heart attack yesterday following the completion of his errand to discuss a military alliance with Spain. No delay is expected to result in the progress of the Spanish negotiations. The admiral had kept his reports up to date at the time of his death. President Truman today studied the question of Sherman's successor, and prominent in the speculation are the names of Admirals Arthur Radford, Commander-in-Chief of the Pacific Fleet, and Robert Kearney, American Commander of Allied Forces in Southern Europe. The truce negotiations in Korea are in a state of suspended animation, although telephone communication is being kept open between the Allied headquarters and the communists at Kaesong, just in case the Chinese and North Koreans should express a wish to move up the date of the next meeting, now set for tomorrow night United States time, Wednesday in Korea. So far, no indication they wish to do that. The communists are continuing to build up the supply and troop concentrations, and Allied warplanes continue to bomb those targets wherever they are sighted. President Truman today used the Korean truce talks as the text for some pointed remarks about members of Congress who have handed him controls legislation which does not please him. At the first sign of possible peace in Korea, the president said, certain extremists in Congress are ready to discard the whole structure of inflationary controls or shoot it full of holes. But the president was assured by Democratic Party leaders in Congress that when the Senate and House conferees begin day after tomorrow to reconcile the two measures, a workable controls bill will be passed before the old law expires at the end of this month. And some prices went up again today. The Office of Price Stabilization permits an increase on some clothing, mostly woolens, and a limited number of other manufactured articles. This is the first breakthrough of the June 30th order freezing at most price ceilings. It will also be permitted for soda pop to be sold for more than a nickel a bottle. But if pop goes up, some prices may be going down. Plentiful supplies and shopper resistance may lower the cost of a number of food items. There may be some distressed selling, according to a survey of several American cities by the Associated Press. Canned and other staple foods processed during the high prices of the scare buying wave of last fall and winter may come down. Many wholesalers and retailers have bigger inventories than they had a year ago at prices higher than what it would cost to replace them now. One food chain official says current replacement costs in some instances are well below those of stocks of items now on store shelves or in warehouses, and he notes recent scattered reductions in soap products. As for meats, shortages are reported in the lower-priced cuts, with steaks and expensive roasts going begging at sometimes less than ceiling prices. The government of Czechoslovakia has rejected a demand by our State Department for the release of Associated Press correspondent William Otis, imprisoned for espionage. Ambassador Briggs presented the Czech Foreign Office a week ago with a note insisting that Otis be freed. The Czech reply was forwarded to Washington, where it was declared to be unsatisfactory, but its text was not made public, neither was our note to Prague. A request that an American official be permitted to visit Otis in prison has simply been ignored. And the entire matter is going to be reviewed by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Senator Monroney of Oklahoma has introduced a resolution calling for a complete diplomatic and economic break with Czechoslovakia unless Otis is released within 90 days. Senator O'Connor of Maryland sponsors a resolution to bar all communist reporters from this country to cut off trade with the Czechs, and to put the case before the United Nations. 7 or more similar proposals are up before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Chairman George Taylor of the Wage Stabilization Board announces an investigation will be made into several thousand complaints of violations of pay ceilings, that criminal prosecutions will be reserved for flagrant cases. Investigations will be centered in the shipbuilding, tool and die, and construction industries, where the manpower situation is acute, and spot checks will be made this year of 1 out of every 10 employers of 8 or more persons. More discussion on the $10 billion tax increase, which President Truman asked for again today. Both the National and State Chambers of Commerce told Congress the defense budget can be balanced without any tax increase. Both groups have suggested that if new taxes are necessary, they should come in the form of sales taxes, the very idea of which is repugnant to Congress. The Middle Western floods appear to be losing some of their destructive force despite 5-inch rains in Missouri and Illinois, and the passing of the peril tends to lead to the conclusion that all is well. This is not the fact. The rivers have left behind them people without homes or enough to eat, a gigantic job of rehabilitation even though the sun is shining. So this is a reminder that President Truman has asked the people of the United States to contribute $5 million through their local Red Cross chapters to help out. As the president said, the real work in the flood area is just beginning. Months after the memory of floods is forgotten by most people, the Red Cross will still be on the job. In Tehran, a cabinet member indicates today that Iran is moving to reopen the talks with Britain on the dispute over oil nationalization. The Minister of Education says the government has now found a formula for the new start on negotiations with Britain that broke down a month ago. In London, at news of that, oil stocks recovered. Foreign Secretary Herbert Morrison also put off a common speech he had planned this afternoon. Informed sources say that Morrison had intended to announce a decision to begin withdrawal of all British technicians from Iran. This is Don Hollenbeck. I'll be back in a moment with the footnote to the news. Now, here is Bob Dixon.
Had your vacation this year? If you have, I'm sure you had a swell time at the beach or the mountains or on a long trip across country. That meant your car had a hard time while you were taking it easy. What it needs is a good, thorough after-vacation checkup by your Amoco man. Tires, for instance. Are they still okay? Are they safe? Is the battery in good shape or is it low on water? Is the crankcase oil all dirty from the dusty roads you've been driving down? Are the chassis lubricants worn out or squeezed out so that the car is full of squeaks? Well, your Amoco man will take care of all that. Putting your car back in first-class shape is his business, and he knows his stuff. He'll check the tires, fix the battery, service the chassis with factory-approved lubricants, drain the old oil, and put in fresh, new oil. And when you drive away from his Amoco station, your car will have a new lease on life. It'll be in first-class shape, ready to take you anywhere you want to go, with all car troubles all left behind. And now, here's Don Hollenbeck with a footnote to the day's news.
A comment today on world affairs by Will Durant, the philosopher, the historian, and author who has returned to this country from an 8 months tour of Europe. Shipboard reporters customarily ask such returning travelers their impressions of world affairs, and Durant says that world affairs are just normal times, as he put it, precisely a snafu, just as it's always been, just as it always will be. And that's the footnote to the news.
When you drive into an Amoco station, you'll see another pump beside the Amoco gas pump. It's the American gas pump. And if you're a user of regular gas, this is the gas for you. American gas is refined by the makers of Amoco gas. It's the leader in its field. And from Maine to Florida, it's known as the best of the regulars. For American gas, for all famous Amoco products, stop at the Amoco oval sign of greater values. Tune in to Don Hollenbeck tomorrow. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.